Are we rolling, like, cameras wise?
Right, let's we kick it off.
Let's kick it off. So today we've got Dorian Day with us. Bit of a jack of all trades. Yeah, but we'll clap him in before. Yeah, obviously came across you for a number of sort of mediums, mate. You photographer, you work, you know, in music as well with your label events company OTL. So yeah, really excited to have you on, man.
Thank you, bro.
Thanks for making the appearance, bro. So yeah, we're doing these sort of like bi-weekly, these podcasts. So we're really excited to get some guests and also like close mates of ours from the scene down. So yeah, thanks for coming.
Thank you, bro. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I guess like the right place to start might be we were all out together in Outlook this year.
That was banging, man.
Yeah.
Crazy bit.
Yeah, Outlook was mad. That was like a bucket list.
Yeah.
I remember when I got a call up for that and I was so gassed. I've been watching, like, I feel like anyone who likes the UK underground music, like when they were younger, I just spent it watching like clips on YouTube of like boat parties at Outlook.
Yeah,
and I'm like, as soon as I'm 18, I'm going, like, don't care what it takes. And then obviously COVID hit, so I couldn't go for a while. And then I went the year before and like knew people that were playing, just kind of like weaseled onto stages and that, took photos, kind of undercut people, but like that's the game. And then I was very lucky to be brought onto the team this year, thanks to kind of like Holly Douglas and Rishi, who is obviously the booking agent for them and programmer, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, this year was mad.
It was.
It was like up there with some of the best like music I've seen in a long time, I think. And
for sure.
I think it's going in a really nice direction.
No, 100%. And like, yeah, we're very tempted and probably will end up going again, you know, for 2026. It was our first sort of like extended group sort of festival we went to, because us three have known each other for a long time. We brought along PJ and Fisher, if you know him.
So we
had like a real crew out there. Hopefully next time we go, it's an even more extended group.
I literally had the same. I went with like what my childhood friend, who like me and him would just speak about this festival the whole time, and then like a couple of my other close mates. So it's like the exact same.
Yeah,
they've already booked it again.
Have they? Yeah.
Whereas I'm like holding out, hoping that I'll get brought back onto the team, but like I'm gonna be there regardless.
Yeah.
Like it's perfect.
It is. Literally.
You're like, you get a holiday and you get to see all these crazy DJs and you can just like chill by the beach and you're not in a tent.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, you can go home, shower. You got a bed. You got aircon. You can cook.
Yeah.
Like it's a great setup and the site's amazing.
Yeah, man.
It's just done.
You are on site.
Not this year. No, I probably could have asked for it, but like, don't really want to like be bunked up with like the videographers and photographers, because like we're all just working. Like, I was like lucky enough where I could like go back to my mates and like my mates were cooking, but also they kind of get like what I do. So when I was like, yo, I've just got to bounce, I've got to go and shoot this, they're not like bothered about it. They're like, we'll just catch him in a bit. So like it was a nice setup. And then when I wasn't working, like just link up straight back up with them, and like they were all on like a next level of smoke, because they just were like, this is what I've been saving up for, waiting for, like I want to get, I'm getting stuck in. And like it was it's a good setup, man.
Yeah,
it's nice to get out of the country for a festival as well. 100%.
Is that your first international fest?
I guess so, like legal one. Yeah. Like I don't really know if like La Fête in Paris is legal, but like I've been there. But that's like mental.
Yeah.
It's just loose. Like, because it's just sound systems in the street in Paris. Like, there's not really any laws. So I don't really know what it's saying. But that was like, that was cool. And I'm going back there again this year as well.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I know what you mean about Outlook. It kind of just is that whole package. And like, there is such a difference being able to go back, get a good kip in an aircon room.
Like, so I mean, you get back, like, it's hot there, man. Like, it was hot.
Yeah, it was really,
and like, you get back and your room's just cold, crisp. You get in, like, you're not getting in some sweaty tent. It just like, stinks.
Nah, mate, it's
raining.
Oh, no, that was scary. That was like the fastest I've ran in like a good 10 years.
Did
like,
you double your equipment?
Well, I had all my kit and like my bag was water resistant, but that was not like a light shower. That was like biblical rain. And I remember running in and like we were all in the media office, and obviously we were next to where the whole like team managed the festival were, and they're like, they've got all these mad weather maps up and stuff, and they're like trying to work out if they're gonna have to lock it off for the whole night. And then luckily it kind of blew over and we got the all clear and it could go on again. But like it meant quite a lot of people's sets got mash up, but a couple brave agents put their foot down and basically said what an artist wasn't going to perform unless they kept it open for another hour. So that's why the Yard stage, the Metal Messiah stage, went on for another hour, and we had that was mental cipher.
That's crazy.
That was crazy. Like, if you look in the video of that when it starts, you can see me in the back, and I've got like a grin like the Cheshire Cat. Like, there's just everyone's there. I'm like, this is mad.
Yeah.
Now, when it was raining, we were all like sort of stuck under this tent. And to be fair, met people that like, obviously we'd never met before, but like, they're kind of like, you know, at a festival, there's always someone. And you see him everywhere. Yeah, it was a couple funny.
Medical tent.
Yeah, in the medical tent.
Was that the Metal Messiah set like one of the best like moments you've shot? Like, you're at?
I think it's definitely up there. I think because basically Flo Dan's agent was like, look, he's still doing his set, so, and he doesn't want One Man and Plastician's set to get cut off, because that was like the most hyped thing coming up. Like, that was the thing everyone was most excited for. So his agent was like, look, we want to run this back. Like, let Flo Dan do a set with Carnage, and then tell every MC at the festival they can jump in, and they want Nefertiti in the mix as well. But the one rule was no one was allowed to spray until Flo Dan had finished his first 16. So like Flo Dan obviously just goes in with like Shellaverse or something, and obviously it just, the whole like, before it was raining at their set, it was like pretty full. But when we all came back, like you couldn't see the back.
Yeah.
And like being in the booth where we were, like looking out, you were just a bit like, rah, there's a lot of people, man. This is going to be special. And then obviously like such a good mix of MCs and people, like One Man and Plastician are obviously just like timeless selectors, and Nefertiti's just, well, in my opinion, the best DJ in the modern era. And I think that like them three together, it was just like, it was a party.
Every MC under the planet.
Yeah, literally, like everyone was there, like, and everyone was getting on. And then like even like on the side of the bit where like people couldn't see, like, bruv, the rest of the festival were just chilling on the wings, just watching. Like, it was mad. Like, if you look in the video as well, like people just start standing behind the decks more and more, because it was so, like, it was sick.
Yeah,
that was definitely a highlight. And I think just like the fact that no one really knew what was going on and whether like the storm was as serious. I mean, it was serious, but like if it was ever going to end. So I think everyone just had that like pent up energy
in it,
like, I mean, sort of ready for it.
Yeah, it was mad. Like, having that all happen, I think it made it a lot more special, because people were like, nah, we've got to like send it now, like, because it could have not. So it made it a lot more special. And like the whole team, like logistically wise, like handled it so well. Like, obviously Ed and his mate, I've forgotten his name, but they were running a multicam setup. They were running a multicam setup, and I was like, mate, like this water is not a joke. Like, what's camera done? Sound techs as well. Like, they were just pulling bin bags over the decks and the soundboards. I'm like, oh my god, this is like, it could go quite left. But it's
one
it
of
was
those,
good
like, moments you couldn't write, really.
The lightning was it was a storm. It wasn't like a little, it was like a proper electrical storm.
Yeah,
it was special though. Made it a special.
It wrote off a pair of shoes of mine. I literally put them in the washing machine when I got home. I like three runs, and every time they stank. Yeah. So I just had to chuck them. They're gone.
I had three white t-shirts. I don't know why I decided to wear white t-shirts to a 30 degree festival, but I had to throw them away. They were like yellow because I just sweat so much. Like running the kit that I was running as well, because I was only shooting on film. Like, none of it's light; it's all heavy. It was like carrying it all day. I stank by the end of every day. But that was a special festival, man. It will always be. I think it's in safe hands.
Yeah, I think. Oh, 100%.
I think with Rishi at the helm, I've got a lot of faith, and he honors a lot of culture. and legacy for so many places outside of London, which I think is something to really be recognised, especially with like you lot as well.
Yeah,
being in Newcastle, like I spent most of my early career in Manchester, and like he gives a pedestal to so many artists from Manchester, but also like he's now starting to honour people from like Birmingham, Leeds, Sheffield, like
Newcastle,
Nottingham,
too, yeah.
Newcastle, yeah. Like there's all these people that like, in my opinion, deserve way more limelight than half the people from London.
Yeah,
shout.
Nah, he does it. Like, he does it right. Yeah, 100%.
Like you can just, and also there's like proof in the pudding in that of like on that The Metal Messiah set. Like any time Sox touched the mic, just instant loof. Like he's going over a Julia Bashmore's tune and just absolutely blew the gaff off. And it was like the clip that went viral. And it's like that's what I mean. Like you can't, the people can't rap like he can because of his accent and his flow and his like ability to freestyle. And I think it's great that people like that are getting the limelight because they deserve it. Not that other people don't, but some people deserve it more.
I think bringing The Metal Messiah on board, that was like...
I mean, I've worked with him a few times now. And honestly, like, I say they, because people want to keep the anonymity. They're just amazing. Like, so screwed on, so tapped in. Like, the amount of shows I've been at and they've just been there. Like small ones, like underground, like not a lot of people know, and they'll be there, and I'm like, that's why they're so successful in what they do.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
100%.
Yeah, no, and I guess like, see, we've touched on Outlook now, and you like touched on Manchester as well, which we'll bring into it. You mentioned like before going Outlook and before turning 18, you're watching all the videos and stuff. So I guess like taking it back, was it always music? Like, was that always, there was sort of no option? You were always going to get involved in some way.
Yeah, I think that boils down to my dad primarily. He was like, when he was my age and a bit younger, he was doing lighting and sound for a crew, and they were doing like warehouse parties and illegal parties across the UK. And I was raised in a very like, musically affluent household, in the fact of like my dad spent a lot of time traveling the world, so like he's got all of these mad old ska and dub reggae and kind of like old school dubstep and kind of like that start of that sound from like all over the world. And then he's got like massive pockets in like soul and blues, but then also like loves like an early like the 2000 to 2010 era of like drum and bass. Like my mum and dad's honeymoon album was LTJ Bookham Music 03. I think Music 03 or Music 02. So like in the car, like I wasn't just listening to like Radio 1. Like I was listening to like Burial and like Hyperdub and Marvin Gaye. Yeah. So like it was always kind of bound to happen. And then my close circle are all kind of parents that were involved in music or have a really big passion about it. And it was like, we were 15, 16, couldn't go club. So we were just hitting forest parties, squat parties, whatever, just like, because we just wanted to dance. And then it all kind of started from there. And that's when I kind of started taking photos, because like we were going, you know, getting on a train to like Slough or St Albans, like outside of London. And like getting locked in a warehouse with like a bunch of dodgy people, but there was a sound system, do you know what I mean? And it was like, for a lot of kids in like inner London as well, when you couldn't get a fake ID or you couldn't access a club, like that was where you went.
Yeah.
And that's how I met, like, and that's how I know a lot of people today. It's like through those parties, like some of them were sick and some of them were horrible, like, but that was the kind of risk you ran with it because, you know, they're not regulated.
Yeah.
But that being said, they're on the rise again all across the UK, and I think there's something to be said about that. And I think also a lot of people are doing it really well from what I've heard. Like I was at one not too long ago, and like they were running like a full operation, and I was like, this is cool.
Yeah.
Like, and it's bringing people together, and it's not as like financially engaging because like a lot of people can't afford to go out.
And people craving it as
well. It's a hard one. Like it's difficult to like say that music isn't like classist, but it is. Like if you've got money, you can go out. If you haven't got money, you have to get creative, and that's where people come into that. But that's where like amazing subgenres or spaces or nights or clubs or artists are made. Like
yeah,
you ask most people, like a lot of people who are kind of like, we could say, smashing it in the industry. Like, most people started there.
Yeah.
Like, and that's something really important to hash in on. I think, like, there should, like, be a lot more respect to kind of the roots of UK culture. And yeah. I think, like, people like Save Our Scene and like, people like that who are standing up for venues and grassroots venues and rights in music is really important.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I think for us, like, Newcastle seems to be, to be honest, like, one of the only smaller cities that's, like, holding on to their venues at the moment. I think it's got a really sort of supportive scene. We do pretty much all our shows now, especially through club season at World Headquarters, which has been around for like 30-odd years now.
I mean, all the clubs up there look amazing. And this is what I mean, is like, in these kind of like smaller cities where there isn't as much support just in general, like, you'll have these like strongholds. Like, it was the same in Manchester. Like, Stage and Radio has been going since I can remember. Same goes for Hidden. Like, granted, they switched stuff up as time went on, but like, Newcastle and Manchester are probably the only two cities I know of in the north that aren't like hemorrhaging clubs.
Yeah.
Like, Leeds is basically done. Right. They got nothing left.
Yeah.
Like, they're just losing clubs left, right and centre because there's no support. And the way the university's set up there is like, people get their degree and leave. Yeah. Whereas like, I think it's Newcastle, Liverpool and Manchester, they're some of the few unis that have like quite a high rate of graduates staying after they've
uni.
Because the retention is there, which is a big compliment to any city if you can do that.
Yeah, sure.
Definitely.
So Manchester, talk to us a bit more about it. It's obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on in our scene. Like, how did you first sort of, like, get involved? You know, obviously you're at uni. Did you know people when you went? Were you there with mates, or was it sort of just get stuck in yourself?
When I moved there, I'd been 18 for like 3 weeks. I went on my own. Like, I didn't know, like, actually didn't know anyone. I was just going like raves on my own and like with kind of people I kind of knew, but like, I didn't really like them. And then I met a group of people at a club called Breadshed that is surprisingly still going. And they ended up being my housemates, and like, that was kind of like my entrance. And then through them, I met two boys called Saul and Red, and they basically taught me how to DJ. They had a setup in their room. I've got photos of it somewhere. I'll send them over. But you can actually like, it's the most like DIY setup, like CDJs, no waveform. Like, they were like the first ones, but they were like the first people that like were teaching me how to mix. And then I was just going out. Like, I was in first year and like, I was living kind of near town. So it's like, I could just go into spaces and go into clubs. And then I had a camera. Like, I used to have like disposable cameras from Boots, and then point and shoots. I bought point and shoot with my loan. And I just started showing up at places and just kept showing up. And then like, would sneak backstage and would sneak into the green room and would just talk to people. And then through that, I met Rich Reason, who runs Hit and Run. And he was kind of the first person to like properly pay me to come and shoot and put like trust in me to like document his nights and stuff. And like, he got, like, he was the first person to kind of like give me a bit of a role in terms of like access, and I could actually like be in these places. And it was cool. And then from there, it just started to kind of trickle as I like became friends with more people and was like playing. Then it kind of came in, and then like, I think I was in my third year of uni. We were just going to the same nights. We were like, this is all getting a bit boring now. Like, it's just the same thing over and over. And that's when OTL was kind of conceived as a concept between like me and three of my mates, Lou, Darnie and Don. And we basically, like, bit of backstory, like, Darnie's half Indian, Don's half Dominican and Lou's half Jamaican. And we found that at quite a lot of venues in Manchester and nights in Manchester, there was a lot of stigmatism towards race and skin colour. And quite regularly, they were targeted more by security and also just targeted by people in crowds. Like we'd be chilling in a rave with a hood up and like, they'd be like, oh, what are you selling? It's like, mate, like, we're just here to dance. Like they've all got like full-time jobs, like proper jobs, not like, do you know what I mean? And it, like, they don't work in bars. They're like producers and they work in brand advertising for brands. And it was like, from that, we kind of wanted to create a space where you could come and there was like it was a completely safe space, but also there was like an element of like interactivity. Like we had all these different visuals we'd make and like do art exhibitions and like make clothes and sell stuff and like do prints, projections. Like we'd map rooms and stuff and project on them and like make it a bit more like interactive for people to like enjoy. Because after a while, like there's not a lot of clubs in Manchester. And I guess it's probably similar to Newcastle in that sense of like, you have to get a little bit creative after a while because you can't just be the same club night over and over because otherwise people just get bored. Like we live in a generation where like people can't even hold their concentration for like 15 seconds. Like to have an event or brand or company that stays doing well, you have to be able to get creative and adapt. And that was kind of how OTL came to be. And then through that, we've worked with some really amazing people, like different brands, labels. We even worked with Salford Council on a project. Okay. Like, it's taking a bit of a backseat in the minute just because we're all kind of in a bit of a movement time of our lives and it's just like not the right time, but we've got some stuff in the works. We're going to hopefully put a party on in London, but like we want to kind of bring that down here, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think our time for all of us is done up there. And like we all kind of wanted a change and that was definitely like me included, but it'll be nice to see where in the new year it kind of goes, but we still love it. Like we still work with all sorts of people, but it's nice to have this like community thing that we just like have people that like we always are around and can kind of like work with and do stuff with and get paid to do as well. But also like have it where people are like, oh no, this is good. Like come to this and they can come to a space and feel accepted and safe at the same time. I think it's quite important. And that was something we were throughout the entirety so far, like so proud of. Was like, we had no issue. We touch wood, we've had no issues like ever. And because we've been really on it and vigilant and, you know, made sure that the space is safe for everyone. And that's something that we really, really pushed for and we're glad that it worked.
Do you think that's something that sort of resonated with like the community?
Yeah, oh no, 100%. Like I'm at one point we had the largest female and queer buyer base for 6 months in Manchester. Like we got the RA stats and like that's when we knew that we were like curating a safe space, because like you go to some club nights and like there'd just be like weirdos everywhere like lurking, and we were like quite combative against that. But also like there's such an amazing queer community in Manchester, and like we've got so many friends that are involved with it in so many ways, and like it was nice for us to honor that, because it's a like in Manchester you've got amazing nights like Homo Block, which is like, in my opinion, I saw Nile Rodgers and Chic at Warehouse Project for Homo Block, genuinely probably one of the best live performances I've ever seen. And I think that for us it was nice to have a space that anyone could come to. And that we were also honouring quite a lot of communities that are very entrenched in Manchester as a whole. Yeah. Which was like, we didn't think it was going to work. Yeah, but like, we just put the right measurements in, like, and like made sure people were safe.
Which creates like a way more like happy and like loving environment, which is just like way better.
Yeah, people would actually dance.
Yeah.
Like, we kind of say to people, we'd be like, I'm in our descriptions, we'd be like, please refrain from using your phone, but like if you want to, you know, take a video you can, but like try and talk to people. And that's what we also really enjoyed about some of the more like art exhibition and visual led stuff that we did, was like there was a lot more space for people. Like we did one where it was like the first 4 hours was like art and all these different visuals and projections that people from various parts of the scene had made, and everyone could like chat and talk to each other. And then we started the music, and that was really great, because we, like, I think by like 10 p.m. they'd like sold out of most spirits on the bar because everyone was just drinking.
Yeah.
And then by the time we got the party going, like it was boofing and it was banging, and it was like really nice because like people could talk to each other. I think that's something that can be so lost in this generation. It's like actually just chat to someone you've never met before.
Yeah.
Even smokers, like.
Yeah, I think credit to you guys as well, because, you know, it's one thing in a really small city, but in a city that's as big as Manchester, it's probably quite hard to sort of like garner that community. So, you know.
It took a lot. I mean, we had like a whole team of people that would help out and get involved, and like we still work with them all the time. And like, I think that was kind of what also tied in with people it's like we stayed true to like people that stood by us and like honored that, and like it meant that, you know, we kept it so centered to that, that it was just like, and it still is, and that's like really special. Because also like when we started playing on radio and getting residencies and stuff like that, we were like getting people who we'd been like co-signing, and then through that started the label, and then we've been putting people on that, and it's like we still work with those artists. I mean, I mainly look after the label, but like I still work with everyone that's put out tracks with us. Like, he just checking in, like, because they'll kind of send me stuff and they'll be like, "Oh, what do you think?" And I'll just be like, "I'm quite honest, but I'll constructive criticism." But it's like nice because like I'm watching people flourish. Like, so many talented people that like, I would argue by other labels would kind of just be shunned away because, you know, they're not that prevalent on social media or not listening to that. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
Can you make a good song and do you love it?
Yeah.
And they do. And then that's really special. And like, we've had some really amazing support. Like, I mean, like some of the biggest, like people at the top of their game, like St. Ludo was on with us from the start, and she's obviously smashing it now. She still plays our tracks.
Yeah.
Jossie Mitsu as well. And then Skin on Skin, like, would just download our tracks. Like, I got his email off someone and like just blindly sent it to him. And then like we get sent a rinse clip and he's playing one of the tracks. We were like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's like when you can see stuff like that, and also for like, you know, some of the people we work with quite young, you know, they're like 18. They're barely even been out, and they've got like a big DJ like playing their tracks. It's a good feeling.
Yeah, similar with like with our label, you know, it's about the music, it's about a project that we put together. And glad you touched on the label, because we wanted to sort of talk to you about like your streaming habits. And, you know, obviously we're on Fountain, which is a bit of an alternative way of listening to music and what they're trying to create. Like, what are your habits like in terms of streaming, your opinions on like how the system is right now, you know, with payout for artists, and just kind of wanted to get your opinion.
I mean, I buy a lot of my music. My bank, I've got a show in 8 days, and so I'm just like hunting, but like I've been buying music.
There's
so much fire out on Bandcamp at the minute, because there's been, in the last year as well, there's been such a shift in movement. Like, obviously when I was younger, like I just had Spotify, still do, but like my amount of time listened every year is going down, because I'm spending more time on YouTube and Bandcamp, because I mainly play house music now. YouTube is the goat.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the best thing as in the modern era we've ever made. Like, I think there's so much to be said about long form content on there, but also like the sub communities of people who like are doing God's work, like putting old vinyls up that then I'll find and then I can buy, and like stuff like that. And I think it's great for people to like create dig. I've been seeing there's like a really big thing online about giving IDs, like gatekeeping.
Yeah.
And this guy was like, "Mate, like if I've been searching for a track for like years, like I'm not just gonna give it to some kid on TikTok because he's asked. Like if he comes up to me at the show and like it's like, oh mate, I loved your set, like da da da, then I might, do you know what I mean? But like it ruins it for people. And I think there's an element of preciousness that I like to maintain. Like I'll show people most of my tunes, but I'll tuck some. Like I'm one of those where like I'll change the name. I'll just be like, "You thought," like I'll like change it so they'll read it and they'll be like, and like, because my boys are like proper, they'll stick a phone over the decks type. And I don't mind it, but sometimes I'm like, nah.
Depends on who's doing it. Yeah, like, one of your mates is like, sweet, but
there's an element of pride like when you do find that tune, right?
Mate, like I it's weird, like if I find an absolute heater, like I found a 2-track EP the other day from this label that I just absolutely bang out, and like I heard it, I sent it straight to my boy. I was like, get your ears around this. This is serious, like just unreal, like moodiest house. And the song's 8 minutes long. That's what I want. I want a track that's got time to it. Like I'm getting tired of like, a lot of tracks I'm seeing getting put out that are like sub 3 minutes. I think for electronic music, that's just like what I don't really understand it.
That's interesting because that in like my experience of like releases, any stuff I've had with labels that have gone on like all platforms, a lot of the time they ask you for a sub 3 minute.
Yeah.
And that's basically to cater to the DSPs. That's to cater to Spotify and to try and get these playlist ads.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a big issue in the industry right now. It's chasing
huge.
That. You
it's
know?
Huge. Like we've had it and like I get it because I work with artists in other genres and like it is a thing. Like, I mean, you look at people like SD Kid, for example, like his tracks are short and he's getting replay value. And that's how you earn money on DSPs like Spotify, because you need like just bare listeners listening constantly. And that's how you can keep that replay value. But it means that the songs get old quick. Yeah. There's no legacy. Like, he'll have a legacy because his sound and all of that's insane. But, like, there's so many people that are just, like, selling themselves.
Yeah.
And there's so many artists that I've watched who've started to move onto Bandcamp. And, like, I've seen a really great thing that people do is, like, they'll do a Bandcamp release and they'll be like, oh, but there's also an extra tune when you download it that's tucked away.
Bonus stuff,
and you're, you know what? Like, you're giving something to your supporters, but also, like, your supporters can directly support you. Yeah. And it's something that I've really got onto my boys about, like, when the who are DJs and playing out, I'm like, you should be buying your music. Like, if you're gonna get a vinyl rip off whatever, wherever, buy the vinyl and then you can rip it, in my opinion. I think that's okay. Like, because you've spent the money, you own the rights to the, you own the music. And like, also with Bandcamp, like, it's such an amazing platform. On my phone and my laptop, it's so well laid out. And I think that so many people are starting to shift back to like ownership of the music as opposed to like paying however, I don't even know how much it is a month for Spotify anymore. But it's the same. I was chatting to my mum about it on the phone today. It's like my mum and dad like going charity shops, buying DVDs and box sets again.
Yeah.
Like, why are you paying for net? Like, Netflix is going to go up if they absorb, is it like Warner Bros. Or something? And like, you can go. I go in the Oxfam, buy mine, and found the first whole season of The Wire for 99p. Like, I'll probably find the other four for 99p. Yeah. And then I can watch them as many times as I want, and all I've paid is 99p.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the same with tunes. You know, £1 for a track.
Yeah.
£2 for a track, £3 for two tracks.
Especially less. When you know, like, however much is going to the artist.
Yeah. Bandcamp Friday.
Yeah.
I
go shopping on that every month. Yeah. It's so jokes. I'll wake up, my email will be spammed with all the releases from people being like, but I think that's something to really commend Bandcamp for. And I think it's good that people are creating platforms where it's kind of like different ways of having content. Like, I think long form had been lost for a little bit, and people are starting to realize how important it actually is that you can kind of like spend time with something.
Yeah.
Like
actually create like a piece of work.
Yeah. But also like with a longer song or a longer episode or that, you can, there's more development within it. And you can show more, and you can show skill way more, because you can show a direction and a movement between it, or whether that's in TV or music or art, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, I do have TikTok because it is useful for what I do. I get so many tips photography wise off TikTok and like editing wise. So kind of, I use it quite differently to everyone else, but like, I do find myself sometimes that just, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And you're like, I've just pissed away like 2 hours and it felt like 10 minutes.
I don't remember a single thing about
it. That's what I mean. And like, I've definitely like started to like, I'm allowed to do it at points. But like, for example, when I'm watching television or I'm watching a film, the phone goes to the side. I've now got it where past 6 p.m. my phone's on do not disturb, like, because I'm trying to like have my evenings, like cook and listen to vinyl and you know, have it analog and be in control of that and like just not be like glued to it. Because I think social media can be such a tool and such a weapon at the same time. Like, you go on and like you'll see people, like your peers or whatever, and like everyone looks like they're smashing it, because that's what it looks like, because you're not going to show all the the fuckeries that are happening in your life.
Yeah.
And then you're like, ooh, like internalizing it all. But then like you realize that you actually like, you're all right. So like, why are you even worrying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's going to be the real test of the next generation is like, it. I feel like they're all going to be really messed up.
Yeah.
Just like no attention span. Like,
we're sort of on that brink as well.
Because we were like the last ones where like growing up, like when you were like 10, I didn't have a smartphone until I was 16.
Yeah.
I had a Nokia 310. I've still got it. And I look at it every day and I'm like, I want to get successful enough to the point where I can have an agent and someone who handles my money. And they just call me and text me on my Nokia.
Yeah.
And I go on my computer and do my emails and send off my photos and whatever. And I don't have to be, I'll pay someone to post on Instagram for me or TikTok, whatever it is when we're older. Like everyone who needs my number will have my number and they can just call me. I'd way prefer that anyway. I hate texting.
Yeah.
It's so much easier.
Yeah. It is interesting that sort of like diminishing attention span and ability to like really care. But I think, in a lot of ways, obviously, like social media does bring a lot of benefit, especially for like we were talking earlier about, you know, the sort of tastemaker figurehead DJs of the scene, being able to access, you know, skin on skin, being able to access some of your music. And I think, you know, from that side of things, it's great. But
that's the thing. It's like there's a saying, and they use it in a sci-fi film that I watched called Arrival. And it's about linguistics. And it's basically like the word to them could translate to tool or weapon. And that's why I always say to people, and it was a conversation I had a lot at Outlook as well with loads of artists. It's like, I treat my Instagram like a tool. I draft all my posts up. I have them ready. I do it every Monday for like an hour and a half at 6 or 7 p.m. I just go on, bang it up, turn my likes off. My phone's on D&D by 6:09 and I don't care how many likes it gets.
Yeah.
That's my portfolio. That's how I get my work in. And then we do the same with tracks and it's like, it works. But like, that's a tool. Like, I've connected with people all over the world through Instagram and through social media because I've learned to like use it more as a tool. Like, it's more like LinkedIn for me than anything. Yeah. Like, it's mad. And like, that's why I say to a lot of like younger people and some of the younger producers that we've got, like, that we work with is like, stop watching the numbers. Like, imagine 50 people came up to you and said they liked your work. But anyone would be gassed. Even 5 people came up to me, I'd be excited. Like, I've had people come over to me at festivals and compliment my work, and it still sends me west. So I'm like, how do they know who I am? But you forget to put stuff into physical terms, and it's like, you know, you get 80 comments on a post. Imagine 80 people talking to you in person about your tracks.
Yeah.
You'd be so overwhelmed. And it's like, and I say this to F, like anyone, it's like all it takes is one person to change your life. So just think about it like that when you're putting stuff out, because that's all it takes. One email, one text, one phone call, one post.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? One comment. And you can connect with someone who you might start business with, or gets you into like an amazing position and whatever. And like, there's something really important to be said about talking to each other.
Yeah,
100%, man. And that was a nice little caveat into music, but obviously we want to get back to sort of like, I guess, your main profession, photography. And like, sort of what are your preferences really? You know, what do you prefer to shoot? Events, be involved in music, you know, do you like to keep it separate sometimes? Because I know it's sort of like two passions of yours.
Yeah.
When they like cross over, what's the,
it's a weird one. I've started to shoot club shows less because I was taking bookings that weren't necessarily in line with me as a person, but I found that like, I still love shooting shows. I do it all the time. And like, I love music and that will never change. But I also found that sometimes when I was shooting some events, like just like random ones where like, I don't like the tunes at all. And I'd just be like, oh, this is ruining it for me. Like, I'm not having fun. And it was about, that was kind of where the transition into working more with like brands and labels and artists, in terms of like covers and press and magazines and stuff like that, which has been a really good so far this year for me.
Yeah.
But it meant that I could go to events just with a camera, like not being paid and just like have fun.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of brought it back a lot for me. And also like I will always shoot festivals. I think they're the best thing ever to photograph because you're catching people in like true moments of happiness and love and emotion and excitement. And I like shooting it on really difficult to use cameras because it's like testing how good am I?
Yeah.
Because you've got 1 second and that moment's gone.
Yeah.
And you've got to be reactive and be vigilant and stuff. And I think that that's something I have to like continually remind myself that like I love. It's like challenging myself in kind of different ways. But I think I'll always be near music and photography. Like even now, like I'm working with artists shooting like covers and like working with them on like press releases with magazines, and it's still to do with music, still to do with an EP. Like recently I've just been working with Bex Blue, Finn Foxel and Cy Ming, and they've got a 3-track EP. It's unreal. It's proper like warm, nice, like lo-fi rap, but it's like tasteful. Shot the cover, and it was shot a video as well with a friend of mine, Jay Douglas, who's an amazing videographer. Does like all of Rico and Brighter Days stuff. He's, if you need a music video, tap in, he's cold. And like did that, and then I've now got probably my second largest magazine feature coming out on Monday about that project, because we then shot more stuff for it for like press release and stuff. And it's like I've been working with Bex for like a year now, and the progression with him and his music, but also being able to document that and be friends above all, like as much as we work together, like I can sit with him and like chill and have fun and like link up with him. And I think that's something that I've always loved about music, is like I work with so many of my friends constantly.
Yeah.
I'm not in a 9-to-5 with a bunch of people I don't really like. Like I'm chilling with people who I like, we're similar and we've got similar interests and passions. I mean, I was on a shoot the other day with an artist called Kimber, and like we were talking about it, and he was like, when I go into my, he works in 9-to-5, so when I go into my 9-to-5, like, I don't care what happens. But if I see someone's downloading my track that I care about, he's like, I will care about that more any other time. And it's the same for me. Like when I was working, like I was working in a bar, didn't care what they had to say to me, because I'm like, I'm shooting tomorrow. That's what I'm excited about. And that was where that's when I realized that like, okay, maybe this is what I should be doing for work, because I wake up every day and want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like the label and DJing stuff is like parallel to that because of the involvement with both, but also because I love it. Like, I think that it's nice to have crossovers with it, and like fashion and music and magazines and photography, like they're just, and brands, it's like just constant collisions, and just like there's no way you can't do both.
Yeah.
Nice. You can't.
So is that sort of more editorial?
It's a lot more like, there's a lot more, I mean, I was talking about this as well, is like obviously I love doing press shoots for DJs, but they can be quite repetitive. It is like the nice jacket, backdrop, flash, and it works. It always looks good, especially on film. It always looks good, and I love the images, but like I've gotten to a point now where like I want to be more productive in how I'm like creating an image. So whether that's lighting, styling, direction, backdrops, stuff like that. And I've been on some really amazing projects. But like the only way you can really do that is by like testing. So like just getting a mate who's a model and a mate who's a stylist and just working together. No one's making any money. If anything, I'm always losing money, because shooting film, you just lose money. Like people don't realize how heinous of a hobby it is to be if you want to save money.
Yeah.
Like if I shoot a roll of film tonight at the DJ Mag Awards, that's £25. Just to get the photos. And like, that's something that like a lot of people, I'm like, when they're like, oh, I want to start shooting film, I'm like, you want to buy clothes? That's gone out the window. You want to go away loads? Gone out the window. Unless you're selling your prints or like getting massive jobs and that. But like in the beginning, mate, I remember like my first paid gig as a photographer, I got £30, and I was so excited because that was my weekly food shop. Yeah. I was like blown away that someone was going to give me £30 to take photos.
Yeah.
And then obviously like down the line, it's kind of jumped through. But yeah, it's I'm proud to say that I love it, and I think that's something that I'm very lucky to have found at my age.
Yeah, so it's the same for us, really. But it's also, obviously, we've talked about like the good and the bad with social media and comparison and stuff like that. And I think when, like, obviously we all work other jobs and whatnot, like like Kimber, you're mentioning, but I think with being an artist or working in music or working in photography, like, you're your own boss.
Yeah.
So I think setting boundaries, like, I don't do it, but I like the idea of having my phone on do not disturb.
Yeah, discipline, it's like the most important skill, man. And it's like, I've really had to like rein in on it. It's really hard, bro, because like, I'll get a message from someone who, like, I know it's straight money as soon as I get there, or like, it's going to be a really good job, and they're messaging me like 10 p.m. and it's like, I shouldn't be replying now, reply in the morning, but then I'm like, but he might not want to work with me by 9 in the morning. Yeah. So it's hard, but that's what like a lot of the creative industry is about. It is 7 days a week. Like, if you're in music, you're on the night shifts, you're doing the long hauls, man. Like, you're traveling around all over, you're doing like 5 a.m. finishes, and like, so you work out pretty quickly who loves it and who doesn't, because you've got to show up no matter how you feel, how hungover, ill, you got icky tummy or whatever, you still got to show up. You can't not. Like, and I think that's like the real test at like the age you're in, is like getting that bit across is a lot.
Yeah
man, for sure.
Have you had any like horror stories like on the job?
Oh, bruv, like I've had some absolute rotters. Like, I had a really, really big shoot with a really, really big model, and I didn't even roll a film on properly, and it didn't take a single photo, and didn't realize till my lab emailed me, and I had to tell her and give the agency that had booked me to get the money back, and that was basically just instant bridge burn. And then I've had like disagreements with people, promoters, other label owners. I had a guy try and use my imagery for his artwork for a release, didn't message me. I had a guy use my photos for a write-up for a magazine and didn't message me. So I've got a thing now where I've got like rights to my images that I pay for, and it's like, yeah, you people don't realize it, but like with photography, like, people take the mickey constantly. And then also, like, I've had it where like I was working with two artists, which I'm not gonna name because they are both very big, but I did the shoot for free because they said that there wasn't any budget, and then I went on and it was plastered all over like some of the biggest pages and platforms, and I received zero credit across all of them. And I did talk to them about it. I was like, look, I can understand if it's an honest mistake, but you've been doing this for a while now. One of them especially has been doing it for a fucking long time. And I was like, you above all people should know to do that. Like, cool, no budget, like, I'll do that, I'll work with people, but like, at least like honor my work a little bit. And that was that happened not too long ago, and that was like a bit of a kick in the teeth. But like, it's, that's what happens.
Yeah, it's the danger of the game in some ways.
And that's why, like, even when I'm like just coming onto jobs now, no matter how big or small, like in the invoice or the contract or whatever, I have it kind of laid out a little bit. Like, you've got to do this. Just because, like, you know, that one was didn't annoy me at first until I spoke to my mate about it, and then she's like, you should be pissed off. I was like, well, I am now. Do you know what I mean? I was like, oh, like, I've actually been well shafted. Like, that's something that you kind of like, it happens. And then I've had it with people on jobs. Like, I've brought people onto jobs where their sole purpose of being there is to try and steal my clients off me or make me look bad in front of my clients. And like, it happens way more than you think. And like, that's why, like, I'm very apprehensive with who I bring onto jobs with me, because I've got some people like I work with that like you've got to be careful with them. Like, a lot of photographers can be pretty brutal with each other. Like, I think I'm one of the nice ones because I don't really gatekeep anything. And also, like, I'll just help people. I don't really mind, like, because I know that I've spent enough time building on my relationships with the people I work with that, like, I don't think I need to worry, because I make so much time for them constantly.
Yeah.
And support what they do. And that's how you create a legacy and also get access to rooms that you wouldn't expect to get into. I mean, like, the biggest example would be, like, and he's like a fucking brother to me now, it'd be Screws. Like, yeah. me and him got booked on a Valentine's Day lineup and played, and then he came and stayed at ours and didn't leave for like the whole weekend, and then was back up like 6 weeks later and stayed for like a week.
Literally got an identical story with
genuinely, I can't give him his flowers enough. He's probably one of the most talented producers I've seen in a while. Oh, and he's so about like his community and working with people and just making stuff.
Yeah.
But also he's lovely and he's an unreal DJ. But like, without him, I wouldn't have met Cologne, wouldn't have met Nines, wouldn't have met Bex and Paul, wouldn't have met any of their friends, wouldn't have met Finn or Simon or being on this project at all. Yeah. Because it trickled down the grapevines because I met him.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
got on. And like, I'm seeing him tonight.
Yeah.
He's at the DJ Mag Awards.
Should we talk about tonight? What's your predictions? Because this is going to come out well after. So.
I think there's some categories that are harder than others. Yeah. I think there are some people that are clear winners. I think Nefertiti should win Best DJ. Now, he's got quite a tough category because he's got people like Simone, Interplateau Criminal. I can't remember who else, but like there's a lot of talented people in there. But he can play on 8 decks at once. Like, I'm sorry, but if we're going to go down to best DJ in terms of technicality,
yeah.
if we're going to go to technicality, he is, the he can do the most, the right? He can also do a 4-deck mix on vinyl, which is even madder because, I mean, he already doesn't use waveform. So for him, it's probably not even that deep. But then also over the last year, you've watched him start playing 160, start playing slower, start playing faster. His back-to-back with Techie Latex was probably the best 2 hours of live music I've seen in years. Like, closing Outlook with Scraps was, I mean, I've got the audio from the interview they did when we were doing the interview with them, and like, they called their set a lasagna on top of a lasagna within a sandwich. And it was like, they said it was the back-to-back that would cure Brexit, something like that. And they're going to do it again and do it in France. But funnily enough, their agent, Neffa's agent, reached out to me because they're going to be doing a series of shows, I think, around the UK. They asked if we wanted to do one of the legs. So, but he's just brilliant. I really hope he wins his category. I hope Save Our Scene win their category for Underground Hero. George and the rest of the team and like very dear friend of mine, Holly, like work their asses off. They're for the people. It's basically a political party at this point. And like, they do so much for music, like, compared to some of the other people in that category who, yeah, they're I don't know, like, there's one person on there who shouldn't be there, but I think, like, and that's because, yeah, whereas DJ AG is because he works with a convicted abuser. So, not much of an underground hero, bruv. You got called out for it, pulled it down, and then put it in a different city.
Yeah.
You're part of the problem. Don't platform people like that.
Yeah.
Like, he got guilty and like tried to revoke it and the court threw it out again, so he's double guilty.
Yeah.
So what more confirmation do you need? And like, I think that a lot of people in the scene kicked up a fuss about that, including me, and like, that by default, get him out.
Yeah,
sorry, but like, that's rule 101. And like, I've had it, like, I've had a, that was another one, I was working with clients and I got sent an open letter by someone else, and turns out one of them had like 5-year long case of like domestic abuse and violence. I dropped them instantly. I just sent them an email. I was like, we're done. I don't want to be anywhere near you lot. If I'd known that when I'd started, I wouldn't have taken it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you, like, I'm not working with that. And it's,
I think it's especially a piss take in that category as well. You know, like,
what's heroic about that? Do you know what I mean? Like, Save Our Scene, like, I'm going to be sat with them. So yeah, that one's going to be mad. If they win, like, it's going to be so mad.
You're going to be first one on stage.
No way. They won't let me anywhere near the mic. I'll stutter or something in front of that many people. But like, I think it's going to be, if they win, they're going to have a really good conversation to the crowd about the state of music. I mean, like there are so many things that we should be kind of pushing towards, and they're the voice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they've saved quite a few venues already across the country, and they're fighting for so many more. And I think that, like, that's God's work for the, that is underground hero.
100%.
Do you know what I mean? And then best breakthrough, a good friend of mine, Mr. Silver Bump, has been nominated.
Yes, mate.
He better win that, because I can't lie, the rest of that category, like, they're good, but they're not him.
He's at the
speed.
He's buff, like, every time I go on TikTok, there is some guy doing that dance. Like,
yeah, he's got
and
it
he's got it on lock, man. He's got it on lock, and he's so brilliant. And like, I think he's also with his own label, Sterling, and the people he's working with. And like, I work with him quite a lot now, and he's just amazing. I think he's a real testament of someone who's gotten quite successful and big, and is still a good and honest and amazing person, and makes time.
Yeah.
And what a guy.
Yeah, just like, you know, I think that's really good. And then slightly more in the like rap categories, Sox is nominated, but also Kibo is in that same category. So it's a flip of a coin for them, man. Mike, of course, is up there as well. An amazing MC and rapper. And I think they all deserve their flowers for this year. Like, they've been consistently good. Yeah. Screws has got, him and Bliss have been nominated. They've both, I think, like, I mean, they work together so well. The sounds are sound, you know what I mean? They work. They've just actually got a track out today.
Yeah, I saw that.
Can't remember what it's called, but it was I actually quite like it. And then Pozzy's on there as well. All the Dockside boys will be there, which is nice. They were actually one of the first people to bring me on like radio in London. Sick. They made me do this Halloween cypher with like 18 MCs and forgot to tell me that it was Serato Dex. So I loaded in my thing and I had no waveform, no cues.
Rough.
Oh, mate, I was sweating by the end of it.
Can you stream this thing tonight? The DJ, mate?
I think so. It's going to be good fun. But there's a lot of amazing nominees, a lot of people who really deserve to win. And I think it's going to be a nice evening to celebrate, like, UK underground. Like, it's not
for sure, man.
It's not like the other ones where you just got like all the bait rappers and singers. Like, these are people who, like, it's every day. Like, yeah. They're not signed. Some of them aren't signed to majors, don't have record deals, and they've done all of this. And it's like, I think it's a really important thing to celebrate. You know, all of everyone who's nominated.
It's been a super like up and down year as well. So it's like, it's nice to culminate it all in like celebrating and some good people.
I mean, there's a couple other artists who really, really deserve their flowers this year. Like, I've worked with Jay, I Had a Dream, and I worked with Sexy Lady Massive. And I think they've been nominated in the Mixmag Top 100.
Yeah.
Top 10. Louder Top 100, Sexy Lady Massive Top 10. They are genuinely some of the best performers I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and like, with Jolie and the rest of the team at the helm, like, they're in such a good stride. And I think they're just an amazing little community that kind of, I remember we tried to run a party with them in Manchester and it never came to, but like, me and Jolie were kind of talking about it. And then like, was working with, got to cover them a lot at Outlook, and it was like really nice because I'd been watching them from the start and known some of them for years.
Yeah.
And they've been on tour with 4AM Crew for like 2 years in a row now. Like, they're doing, I mean, their Boomtown set looks absolutely nuts. Like, they've got it on lock. And I think there's a lot of people who have had really good years. And I think on the whole, like, as mad as this year has been, a lot of amazing stuff's come out.
For sure.
I think a lot's been done, and a lot, like, as bad as everything's been and like the world's in a bit of a crazy place, I think there's a lot of people doing really beautiful things.
Yeah.
And like, it's nice to have a day where everyone gets their flowers, has a drink, socializes.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of other opinions flying around the room. So I'm going to make sure I shut the fuck up.
Mate, that's why we got you on here today. Yeah. You can get them all out.
No, I'm just going to be sat there like on my best behavior and trying not to fidget.
Whilst we're on the topic of music, should we dig into your picks from your fountain picks?
Yes, sure.
We'll slap on a little mini mix. There's three tracks.
Yeah, that will do it today. Yeah.
Hyphen, Swing It Then, into Sid Tyler, Turn Me On, finishing off with Millsy, All Right Mate.
Let's do it, man. Right, so arguably the most fun part of these podcasts, the Q&A section. We've got some hand-picked, personalised questions for the main man today. Yeah. So we'll dive in. First one down, this is going to be dropping early 2026, so we want to hear your ins and outs. So, you're an opinionated man, so yeah, I want to hear some things here, mate.
Ins. If you're headliner, you should be playing 2 hours or more. There should be no more. Another in, it should be like, everyone should be making longer songs. I think that needs to be done. Everyone needs to allow Spotify, these thieving little pagans, and we can just all go on Bandcamp and own our music, and it will be great. And everyone will make loads more money, and everyone will be happier. I think another in, there are so many lineups that are like just structured around men. I think there needs to be, there are so many bad man female selectors and non-binary whoever selectors that are just being kind of shunned and pushed on and like not being paid either, that deserve to get paid. Pay people, man. It's like everyone's got to earn a quid here and there, like just be gracious in that. Ins, another in, bring back punching. Not enough people get punched, I think. I think people think life's bad, like get punched. You give you a lot of perspective really fast. Now, obviously, that's probably going to come back and bite me in the ass. I'm going to get punched, but I think it's true. Like, I think like in the West, we complain about way too much. My outs, 32 bar bandits, bruv. I want to hear more than 32 bars of a song before you bring in the next 32. Please let the tunes run. Like, just stop doing that. Badger, allow it. Like, it's jarring out, bro. Like, you're playing into the TikTok generation of just like instant release and gratification. Like, unless you're doing an 8-bar mux and grime set, is the only time it's applicable. Other outs, Spotify, get out. I feel like they're investing in some weird stuff that I don't like. Yeah, I don't like AI. Outs, AI.
Yeah.
Get rid of it. I don't want it. I think everyone just relies on it too much. I don't use it. go and read a book. Other outs, Tottenham out, get lost.
I think we can all agree with that. Yeah,
Tottenham, get out. And then bun Trump, bun Netanyahu, bun Putin, and bun Jeffrey Epstein.
I love that, mate. That's a serious list. I love that. A slightly more sort of like serious one as well. Like personal goals for the year, mate. Like what do you want to achieve? You know, maybe not even a year, in the long term. What's something that you want on your repertoire?
I'm getting close to the first book.
Really?
I want to start. Like I want to have something physical. That's another in for 2026. Physicals, vinyl, CDs, books, magazines, exhibitions, like run it. I want to have a physical book. I want to do a full on like exhibition launch. I want it to be, I don't really know what I want to do it on yet, but 9 times out of 10, it's probably going to be about music, because I've just got so much history that I've been around in terms of like the stuff that we've been around today. And I think that'd be a really nice celebration of like everything I've done so far. So I think that's a big one for me.
That'd be sick.
What sort of format are you thinking?
I want a wham off book. Yeah. I want a wham off book, but I'm really big on like, I'm only going to do a couple. I'm going to move like Simon Wheatley and do like, you know, 500 copies and that's it. He obviously re-released Don't Call Me Urban, which I had mixed opinions on as an avid fan. But I think for me, I want to do like 500 copies and then that's it. I'm not doing it again.
Yeah.
Because then in 20 years, fingers crossed, they'll be worth dough.
Yeah.
And the copies I've had stashed away, the like 5 I've kept on ice I can fling for some quick money. I want to do that and have a full gallery exhibition. And then other goals, clear my student overdraft. That's probably one. It's just pissing me off. And I want to travel more. I'm going to hopefully go to Japan. I'm going to hopefully go to New York and go and see some stuff and experience some different cultures, but also take photos there and meet people there. I've got some cool kind of communities and collectives that I've been speaking to in those countries. And I think it'd be really cool. There's like a mad little garage scene in Japan at the minute. Yeah, and I'm trying to get over there. Like rapid, yeah. Like
the spray box guy.
Yeah, man. That's like I just I'm few, yeah. I want to just leave the country a bit more and see different things. I think like that's a big one.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, with work and stuff, you can get so trapped and entrenched, and it's like, just go away, man. It's not that deep.
You can be there when you get.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were shouting about a few like international collectives on like another episode, and there's like so many that are so tapped in, it'd just be sick to like,
yeah, there's like, and it was something that Rishi did so well, like all of these guys from like South America and making this kind of like new type of like bass music that's like Latin infused, and it's DIY and it's weird and it's gritty, but it plays so well, and like honouring stuff like that. Like I'd love to go to Latin America and do stuff there, and like I've got a few people I know who are out there who like I'd love to work with, but I feel like Japan and New York in a year is financially going to be enough as it is, and outlook. So I'm like, Latin America can be 2027 or whatever year. But yeah, I want to go away more.
Like that, mate.
Nice.
Yeah. Right. What are we working down with? Let's go for the North or South debate. This is obviously generic. We can probably give like different categories for this, but like, let's just say generally vibe of a crowd, nights you've shot, North or South?
North.
Yeah.
North, crowds up north. Go White Hotel. That's all I've got to say. You want good crowd? Go White Hotel. Go Progress Centre when it's May and the sun's about to set through and you've got some bad man selects just laying down some absolute tunes. Like the crowds up north. I've been exploring the clubs around London. Bro, some stiff people. I'm like tempted to start walking around with like one of them shock pens. Move, why are you here? Why have you come to stand in a dark room? You catch like, and this is something that I will like, you can ask any of my friends or anyone that knows me, you catch me in the dance and I'm not working, I'm dancing, and I'm not like half measuring that, I'm dancing.
Yeah,
like what's the point? I've worked all day, I can't work to stand in a dark room, be on my phone and judge people.
Yeah.
I don't care, I'm trying to get loose, like I'm trying to have a laugh. you know, be an idiot. Like, that's what clubbing's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be an escape. Like, people just go out now just to prove they were there.
Oh, I've got your north or south football teams.
North.
Ooh, shooting his own team.
Nah, Arsenal's in Highbury. Oh, you mean that's north and south London.
Okay, I see what you did.
North or south, bruv, Arsenal, south. If we're going England, but yeah. If we're going London,
yeah,
if we're going London, yeah. North, every day of the week.
Well, that caveats into like the age old debate. I think I know what you're gonna say to this one, but is it Arsenal's year?
I hope so, man. I feel like we've got it, but if we haven't, it's going to be a tough conversation for Mr. Mikel Arteta.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, like, this is the one year where, like, Liverpool's murk, everyone else has got way too many injuries, and, like, AFCON's going to ruin half the teams in the Prem as well. So, like, I feel like this is the one year where we should be able to do it. And we look good. Obviously, once we get Gabriel back, I'll be a little bit more calm. Because the last game was a bit peak. 95 plus goal was not what we wanted. But
see how this hangs up when it hurts.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, man, I really do. It would be an absolutely amazing feeling for us to win something proper, because it's been quite a while.
It's definitely the best Arsenal team like we've seen for a long, long time.
With the signings we made last season, I think it's if we can't do it now, it's like when.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't too tough for the 10-minute Chelsea, but, other than that.
That was mad. I was so annoyed. I was actually in Chelsea the night before that game, and I was like, God, I had a bad feeling.
Yeah,
we just weren't playing that well.
No, I think especially in like the Champions League, it's been you've won every game.
Murking, man. It's not even it's like just get out and just score.
It's pretty mad.
I don't want to hear none. And you score from set pieces, but check out Madueke's goals. We ain't scoring from set pieces, but he's hitting absolute loafers in the back there. I mean,
all right, funniest moment on the job, like whether it's DJing, photography, or whatever.
Funniest moment, funniest moment. I kicked the whole power supply out for a whole club by accident. When I was like 20. I just stood on this thing and it just popped out. Everything turned off, and it was like mid show.
I never owned
up to it, but I knew it was me. I was like laughing about it to myself. I was like, oh my god, I'm such an idiot. I just wasn't looking. It was dark. Also, like, surely that should have been more secure.
I mean,
but yeah, that was funny.
Who were playing? Do you remember?
It was a hit and run party.
Okay.
I can't remember who was playing, I think.
Rich Reason.
Yeah, shout out Rich. quite a lot of my funniest moments have been that. I'd say, that's probably like the funniest moment that's happened to me. Funniest moment I've seen? That's a hard one. People falling off. I've got it. Warehouse project like 3 years ago. It was Fred again, back to back Fortet, back to back Skrillex, and Skin on Skin tried to stay dodge. No one caught him. Straight to the floor. And my mate was like, oh my God. He just like hit the deck. And what did you expect, bro? It was the front row. Everyone was just clearly just K'd out their face. It was just like, thought it'd be a good idea, and it was not a good idea, bro. That was jokes. That was funny. that's like generational aura loss. Stage diving at Warehouse Project, not getting caught.
Heavy, man. I feel like that's probably like a perfect way to wrap it off.
Thank you for coming.
It's been a pleasure, mate.
Thank you.
Always good to chat anyway.
Yeah.
Nice to be able to do it on the Fountain Podcast, on the Profound Show. Get your opinions, mate. So bro, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Nice one.
Bless.
No, thank you, brother.